This is an ABC podcast.
Warning, strong language alert.
Attention, please. This is the final call.
Welcome to Burn Your Passport. I'm Nazim Hussain. Did you ever notice how no one wants to be a traveller when they grow up? They wait until they need tedious stories to tell their pretentious friends over overpriced coffee. Anyway, speaking of tedious stories, I've got a new baby. I'm a dad, everyone, and I'm too exhausted to keep coming up with themes for these episodes. So, to cap it off, the last episode of the season, we have UK comedian Dane Baptiste and proper Australian celebrity, unlike me, Waleed Ali.
Passengers are reminded to burn your passport.
I'm Nazim Hussain, this is Burn Your Passport. I'm joined by Waleed Ali from Channel 10's The Project.
But how can you tell?
Which is a nightly news show, well, with a light-hearted touch. It's got a light touch. News for the common people, for everyone.
What does that mean?
For people like me.
What do you mean, people like you? Do you watch it?
No, it's in like it's not bloody elite like the ABC. You know, bloody, you get coming here with your big words.
Do you know one of the things I love about ABC is like how often people on the ABC will have a go at the ABC, but it's like a really cool thing to do.
Well,
it's not like the bloody ABC. I mean, we'd always be elite and hoity-toity because what you're trying to do is position yourself within the organisation as someone who's hip enough to be self-aware,
but,
also not guilty of the tropes that you were attributing to the rest of the organisation. So it's actually a form of self-preservation, isn't it?
Who doesn't want to self-preserve themselves?
Yeah, well, yeah, clearly that's...
So that's a good thing, isn't
one of the main aims of life.
So you're saying we're fulfilling the aims of life?
Yeah. Geez, you really turned that back on me then, didn't you?
I do.
Well done.
Well done. Anyway, good to have you back on.
Thank you.
You're one of, I think, two guests that have come back on to the podcast.
Is that right?
Yeah, you passed the audition. That was basically an audition.
Did the rest say no?
Pretty much, yeah. Look, so it's been a while. Was it 2 years ago? Two seasons ago?
I don't know. I haven't kept up with your seasons.
It's a long time.
I don't listen to your podcast.
You know, okay.
Kind of like you don't watch my show.
I listen to your podcast. You know, I listen to The Minefield.
Oh, yeah.
There's a bit of cross ABC promotion.
There you go. Well done. Gold star.
It's a very, very smart podcast. You know, I listen to it's one of those podcasts that doesn't make you feel dumb because you listen to smart people. It's a smart podcast that makes you feel smarter because you can follow along.
Ah. Yeah. I haven't really thought about what we're trying to achieve.
What would you say about this podcast?
Go on.
I've given you a compliment.
I would say that it's had a really good guest twice now.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You compliment. That was an act of self-preservation.
Well, no, that was an act of self-glorification, really. It's a different thing.
But by glorifying yourself, you are remaining current.
Probably not, actually. I'm probably doing damage.
Yeah, tall poppy syndrome yourself.
All that stuff.
Chop your own daffodil head off. No, I don't know. What's tall? No, poppy. Sorry.
Yeah, poppy. It's a poppy. It's you poppy. Changed the flower. You can't,
bloody hell.
If you're going to follow a metaphor through to an absurd extent, you kind of have to stick with the metaphor. You can't.
Well, as you know, I'm not an elite ABC type.
Don't try to.
I'm a bit dumb.
I don't know how to use metaphors and that.
What's the metaphor?
Yeah.
Anyway, good to have you back on this travel podcast.
Thank you.
So you've done a fair bit of travel.
I love traveling.
Especially with Channel 10 are paying for you to go around the world. Where'd you go recently?
No, they're not paying for me to go around the world. Occasionally they send me on a news story that happens to be in another country.
And you're not paying for it.
Well, no, it's work.
Yeah, so they're paying you to go around the world to somewhere else.
You're making it sound like just sort of go.
It's not even a compliment. It's just a fact.
An observation.
Did you get paid recently?
I recently went to Washington
and you got paid.
A story.
Did you get paid?
Well, I was doing my job. I didn't get extra money.
Yeah, I'm not saying you got extra money. You got paid.
Yeah.
And I was on the other side of the world.
I guess.
It was around the world. Yeah, so you got paid to go around the world by Channel 10.
I just feel like you're making it sound like you're really hyping it up when it's actually a pretty standard
kind of
move.
I mean, for most of our listeners, that is a bloody life we will never understand.
What? Coming from you?
I pay for myself to go places and I knock on the comedy room's door and I say, excuse me, can I tell some jokes, please?
Answer me this
People
question.
People go, get out!
Answer
not you, he's back!
Answer this question. How many times would you say I've texted you and said, hey, are you free for brunch? and you've replied,
nah, I'm in Ballarat.
I'm in LA.
I'm in Geelong. I'm outside a pub trying to do a gig.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, a few times.
Yeah, a few times.
Yeah, man.
And how often have you texted me saying you want to do brunch and I'm like, sorry, I'm in Kiev.
But how many times have I texted you and actually asked for halal restaurant recommendations in Brazil and you've gone, remember that when I was in the World Cup?
Yeah, that's that was right. Sick. Why and did you think I'd never? I have
because you went to. Did you go to Brazil
after that? But I don't know why you would ask me for halal recommendations when I've never even been there.
I can't remember. I just remember texting you saying, I'm really hungry, man. And then you said, oh, I'm sure, surely there'll be a kebab shop somewhere. Like,
did I say that?
Yeah, something. And then I was like, oh, God, I found
a kebab. I've been to Brazil and it's very hard to find.
They don't actually do, the Muslim community is so tiny, they don't actually have halal meat. So they've taken like the dispensation where you can just eat whatever.
Oh, is that what's happened?
Well, it's like a Christian, they say Brazil is a Christian country, therefore.
It's Christian, it's people of the book.
People of the book.
Therefore you can, yeah. Do you know what? I was in Argentina.
For people that don't know the rest of that, that means we could eat their food.
Yeah.
So if you're Christian or Jewish, I think that's pretty much it.
Can eat kosher food.
If you invite us over to your place for dinner, you basically don't need to even buy halal meat.
Just go kosher.
Yeah, just go kosher. What about Christian? If you're a devout Christian, what happens then? I don't know.
I don't know if they have a particular method, do they? I was in Argentina once.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't even know if this is the topic. Anyway, I was in Argentina, I was in Buenos Aires. And, you know, Argentinian steak is like such a big deal.
That's it. That's like the world renowned, yeah.
Yeah, which I can't have. So what I did was I Googled halal Argentinian.
I thought you were going to be like, so I found a cow on the street.
Yes.
I slaughtered it myself.
No, I didn't. I found a rabbi. So I Googled halal Argentinian steak and I found a place.
What?
This is amazing. It's in Buenos Aires, right?
Oh, sick.
So I go there one night and it was shut. So, God. And then the next day, then it was shut again. And then I went like, and then I realized it was like the Christmas period. But then I thought, fuck at that. If you're going to have a halal Argentinian steak, be open for Christmas at least.
Bloody hell. No, but that's respectful.
That's just cashing in.
Yeah, exactly. So what, you didn't get to have a...
No, I didn't get it.
Damn.
So I need someone to tell me how... Actually, you know what, don't tell
me. This is a dumb question. Where is Wagyu from? Is that Japanese?
It's not from anywhere, isn't it? It's the way the cow's treated, right?
Sounds like it's from a place, Wagyu.
No, but it's the way the cow's reared. Because it's all about fat content and marbling. How they have that marble?
Oh, right. So it's a guy whose name is like Wagyu, and he came up with a way of fattening a cow or something.
I don't know where the word's from. But they get fed a particular thing, and maybe they get massaged 300 times a day.
I don't want to think too much about what happens to the animal when it's alive so that it tastes good for us. As a meat eater.
But I understand. Well, I could be really wrong about this, but my guess is the Wagyu treatment's okay.
Mm-mm. If I was to top that, I'd play music to the animal.
I wonder what that does to the... You should try that as a business idea.
Just try, yeah. Just play, you know, hip-hop and then a bit of Roger Waters, which is your style of music.
And you can buy your steak.
Yeah, based on your music taste.
Would you like the Mozart steak? Or would you like the Public Enemy steak?
Bit of Kendrick Lamar over here. So you're actually always sick when you travel, isn't that right?
I get sick all the time when I travel. I don't know what the problem is. Like, and when I say sick, like if I think about all of my worst ever experiences of pain and illness, they've happened overseas.
So I remember you were in Indonesia once.
First time it happened was in Indonesia, and I was there for a conference, and I'd never been to Indonesia before, so I was really excited. I landed.
Yeah.
And then I went straight from the airport to the conference because I had to speak like straight away.
Yeah.
So I landed. I gave the speech or spoke on the panel or whatever. It was a long time ago. And then I just felt this headache and went to bed and woke up a few hours later. And it was the most intense sinusitis. I can't tell you the pain.
You were sort of saying it was like your head was about to explode.
Yeah. It felt, there have been a handful of times in my life where I have very seriously countenanced how preferable it would be to be killed. I'm serious. If you'd offered me, if you'd said, you'll get through this, but it's going to be a week, or I can kill you now.
So what is it? What is it? It's just like throbbing?
It's not. I can't actually explain the level of pain. You know what?
Did you call Triple? Is there an Indonesian Triple O?
Well, no, the conference organizers, because the conference was at a hotel and we're staying at the hotel. So the conference organizers eventually found me or something.
What do you mean? You were just wandering around?
No. I think where did he go? And so they might have come into my room. I don't know how it happened. Or maybe I went and found them when I woke up. I really can't remember.
That was as close to you being drunk as you've been in your life.
Yeah, because the pain was so full on and so intense that there's nothing else in the world. Probably the only time in my life I've genuinely scared Susan because I called home in the middle of the night. But I was in such pain I couldn't form sentences.
That is not the Waleed anyone knows.
No, yeah, right. So all she knew...
You are nothing without your sentences.
What am I if not a purveyor of sentences? So what effectively happened, you imagine she's sitting at home and then like late at night she gets a call from me.
From drunk Wal.
Just talking about pain. That's pretty much the only word I was able to say.
So you just said pain.
Why the hell did I call her? Like, what was I hoping to achieve?
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so... eventually they realised, the conference organisers realised this was really serious and been going on for hours, so they just sent me to hospital. And I remember very little about the hospital they sent me to, except that I remember the cats walking around.
What?
Yeah, and I remember...
Were they like medical cats?
I don't think they were qualified. Like maybe they were interns or something, I don't know. They weren't wearing scrubs, so I was a bit worried about the hygiene. But anyway...
They weren't diagnosing you?
No, they did. Well, not that I know of, unless they were like the boss that actually just sends in the underlings, gives the diagnosis and, you know...
Are you sure you weren't just that out of it?
Well, it's possible, but I think other people corroborated it. Anyway, what happened was something got lost in translation massively.
Oh, no.
So they gave me a tablet or something... And it turned out it was an antidepressant.
So you started feeling really happy about your pain.
No, I didn't at all. But I just felt really, really in pain. And I'm like, why is this painkiller not working? Like, what's going on? And eventually they figured out that that's what had happened. So we went to a different hospital.
So somehow
hospital.
They thought that you were like, I'm really sad or
well,
something.
Maybe because I couldn't talk or something. I don't know. I don't know what happened.
Whoa.
I'm not in the best position here to divine everything.
Bloody
that's going
hell.
On. So I walk out with the pain untreated, the condition completely untreated. It was just nuts.
Shit.
So eventually they sent me to another hospital. This was like an international hospital and it was owned by an Australian group of some sort.
Cats?
No cats. Mm. I think that's how you could tell.
That's a sign of
it
good
was
hospital.
The international hospital because right.
No
international hospitals have this weird no cat policy.
Well, maybe that other one was like a vet / human hospital. Like,
well, maybe, look, there's all kinds of...
They don't discriminate.
Or maybe this was all a hallucination. I really don't know. But anyway. So we did this thing. They did scans, whatever, and they came back and my sinuses was just, there was no black.
Whoa.
So in the scan, the black bit's like the space, which is what...
It's supposed to be vacant.
It's meant to be. It was just all grey. So all full.
Can I ask, is that full of brain? Because we know how smart you are.
Don't be like that, no.
It wasn't brain. It wasn't just like, he has got extra brain.
This was just fluid.
So what do they do then?
So eventually they just...
Stuck a straw in your nose and sucked.
They put all... No, they didn't do that.
No.
No? You're not a doctor, are you?
No, right. I'm a cat.
Right, okay, fair enough. Yeah, you're right. That's who you studied at the... What do cats have? Don't have hooves, do they? What do they have?
They've got paws.
They've got paws. You studied at the paws of these cats. No, what they did was they basically jabbed all sorts of stuff in my arm for pain, like serious painkillers, basically knocked me out, and then just hit me with intravenous antibiotics. And within a day, I felt a lot better, but then I had to stay in hospital for 5 days or something.
I mean, that's right. I was in contact with you then. So that one.
That was around the Salam Cafe time.
That's right.
Yeah.
When my wife was in labor a few weeks ago. Because I'm a dad now. Mm. I'm like you.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Mm. And when one of the things that we read about was that when your wife is in pain or when your partner's in pain, if you squeeze their ankle, you try to redirect the pain pathways or something.
Oh, so they can focus on the new pain.
Yeah, because your brain can only concentrate on one. So I was doing that a lot.
Yeah. Did it help?
She didn't really tell me to go away. One time she said, stop paying so much attention to me. Do your own thing as if there's anything else I could do in
the room. But, can't you just check your Facebook?
Yeah, I think she was just like, just do your emails like, as she was yelling. Yeah. But no, I don't know. I don't think it actually, if that worked, if people were like, oh, labor was easy, my husband squeezed my ankle.
No, that's not going to. No. You would have had to have amputated a limb for me to notice. Like, clearly this is not a conversation between two experts about this stuff. But
every time you travel, your head gets full of stuff.
Yeah,
why don't before you go, you create a vacuum in your brain, so you're at a negative pressure. Then when you go overseas, you'll be at a neutral place.
I don't know what the negative pressure period would do to me.
No, try it out.
Yeah, okay, sure. This sounds like a well-thought-through suggestion. Sure, let's just
give
it
a go.
It also sounds something that would require quite a bit of surgical intervention.
Well, if you're listening, you've given it a go. Just let us know. In fact, I encourage you.
What have they given a go? I'm not sure. But So to complete the circle on the pregnancy thing, when I got back, I was
you're really committing to this.
No, I'm just explaining. I was talking to a woman who's had kids, and she
you were comparing the pain.
No, she volunteered when I told her about the ear infection. She said, I had one of those when I was a kid, and it was the worst pain. It was almost as bad as childbirth. And I obviously didn't say anything. I'm just using this now. I definitely didn't use it then. But given that was the second worst pain, it's got to be in the ballpark.
Yeah, it's got, I mean,
that's the testimony of someone who's been through both.
Yeah.
So that's my theory. But
Bloody hell.
For some reason, I don't understand it because travel is the thing I love doing more than just about anything else.
But you're like actually allergic to it.
Yes. Mm. For some reason when I travel.
It's because you travel too much. You've actually, now the world is saying, just stay home. All right. Do you even have any countries left to go to?
Yeah, I've got lots of countries left to go to.
How many? Can you count them on one hand?
No, I haven't been to that many. I have a list of countries I've been to.
Yeah. Have you got those on Facebook? You don't use Facebook.
No, I don't use Facebook.
Do you use the internet much? Are you on the internet?
Not really.
No.
A little bit. Well, yeah, I guess.
Well, there's a thing called social media. People socialise.
Yeah.
You socialise. I know you socialise them.
Yeah.
But people do it on the internet.
Yes, I understand this.
There's one of these little widget app things where every time you go to a country, it colours that country.
I saw one of those physical ones so you can scratch off.
Oh, yeah. Yours would be pretty much.
No, it's not that bad. I'm just looking it up. I've been to 38. That's not that many.
A lot of people probably haven't even been to bloody 38 suburbs in their own city.
So here's the thing. I feel like saying you've been to 38 countries means that...
That's a lot of countries.
If you're talking to someone who hasn't been to many countries, they're like, that's outrageous. If you're talking to someone who's a serious traveller, they go, well, get serious.
Yeah, but what do you mean by serious traveller?
Oh, there are people who've been 100...
Yeah, but people that backpack for life, they're idiots. Get out of here. They don't do life things as well. You know, they don't work, hold down a family. They aren't the most popular person on national television.
They're basically like comedians.
They're like comedians.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, they're not like...
Look at you backpacking your way through life.
Anyway, thank you very much, Waleed Ali.
Thank you.
Whether you're finding your homeland or someone else's, you'll probably find that you need heaps and heaps of stuff to help you do it. Here's Noel Bailey from Bunyip's Great Outdoors to help you on your way.
Do people watch a lot of Bear Grylls and stuff like that and come to you and want to do the same sort of thing?
The younger market does tend to watch Bear Grylls, and Bear Grylls has sort of been a bit of a favourite in that sector of the market, but they tend to be more the domestic campers and not so much the travel market for Bear Grylls fans.
Do you guys sell anything that converts urine to water?
Not quite. I would be encouraging Bear Grylls to carry a small backpack and maybe a hydration bladder and make sure he's got the water. I'm not a big fan of the thought of drinking urine.
Dayton Baptiste is a super funny comedian from the UK, and he came all the way to the Melbourne International Comedy Festival just to experience how bad travel really could be. This is Burn Your Passport. I'm here with Dane Baptiste. How's it going?
Good, sir. How are you? How you doing?
Man, we last saw each other in Edinburgh last year.
That's right. We hung out beyond the wall in the place with no sun. So it was a good environment. It was good. Cool.
How would you describe the backstage of a comedy show? Because I think a lot of listeners probably wouldn't really... Like, when you're on stage, everyone's like, oh, it's just really fun, and they're just looking like they're having a laugh, and they're all just laid back. But the backstage of any comedy room is always just like... It's always just high stress. It's just a bit of tension,
high stress,
people pacing.
Yeah. It's actually what you see. I feel like you probably see comedy at its most corporate in backstage occasionally, in terms of like you'll sometimes observe a hierarchy.
Yeah.
You may observe some nepotism. It can be cliquey and stuff like that as well. And also it's conversations where like people are trying to like validate themselves or qualify based on, you know, maybe some work they've done recently and stuff like that on the one hand. But on the other hand, there is that camaraderie as well where, you know, people that are in this shit with you are kind of like also like, definitely a mutuality where we just discuss, exchange war stories, if you will.
True. And there's so much pacing. You know, it's hard to have conversation because, you know, people are thinking about their 10-minute spot or their 5-minute spot, whatever it is. So it's a very... I think like comedy rooms, like, you know, you've got like big name comedians who might be on the same lineup as just up and coming new comedians. Yeah. And it's just, you know, you wouldn't see that in music or in any other kind of... You know,
no, I think, I think music, I mean, there's just a bigger budget. As an industry, there's more of a budget, I guess, in music festivals where, you know, if you are a headliner, then you find yourself maybe, probably with your own dressing room.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we're a lot more communal when it comes to comedy. You're not in the green room for without green room, you're not going to be there for long enough. There's a lot more of a community there as well. You're right. You don't really see it in music.
Beyonce wouldn't be hanging out with, you know, just some kid
with Bad Barbie or something that. Yeah, that doesn't really happen. Doesn't happen. Yeah. Or, you know, I guess I don't think Michael Jackson and Bieber would have intentionally had to share. Like, I bloody hope not.
Do you think they would have done a collab?
Nah.
I think Jackson would have said no. Jackson would have said no.
Yeah, he'd have said no. And the thing is, like, I know that there are some kind of comparisons between Bieber and Michael Jackson, but to be honest...
What are the comparisons? That they're both just, very popular.
Very popular, and they obviously elicit a lot of hysteria among their fans, and obviously both being young prodigies to an extent, although...
White skin.
Yeah, yeah, and white skin as well. Although you're never going to be able... Justin Bieber could never be Michael Jackson, because while they both share the same complexion, they have different ancestry, and basically it's pretty illegal for a white father to do what Joe Jackson did to Michael Jackson.
That's true.
Yeah, social services would have stepped in a long time ago by the time that began.
Would have been over.
Yeah, exactly.
No career,
because someone would have stepped in. Like, that could only happen, like, in Russia. If it was like Olympic singing, and then maybe they'd get away with it. Cause then they could...
Imagine if Michael Jackson came up through YouTube and you got to see what his dad did online.
Yeah, it'd have been crazy.
It would have been a different viral sensation.
Yeah, people just accused him of trolling. They'd have been like, this is a prank. No one does that. No one does that to their kids. This is a prank.
Hey, where did you grow up?
I grew up in, I was born in Southeast London in Greenwich Hospital, and I grew up in Lewisham.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Have you must have travelled a fair bit.
Yeah, of more recent times, I've been very fortunate to be able to travel. So I remember my debut show was in 2014, and from there, it's just been a whirlwind where I'd say it's one of the greatest parts of the job.
What's your ethnic background?
So my parents are from Grenada. Which is in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. My mom's from a smaller island.
Were they born there?
Yes, they were born there. So my parents. So I'm second generation. So my parents came to the UK when they were 15.
Okay.
And there's a month between them in age.
Well, no, fifth by themselves.
And it was a relatively small community. Like my parents tell me, like in those days, because Grenada is a small island.
Have you been to Grenada?
I have been. When's the last time I was there? I was there. But I haven't been for a while though, about 8 years ago.
Well, so have you got cousins or anyone there?
Yeah, loads of cousins. Because my dad, my dad has a lot of half brothers over there. He's got like 3 half brothers and 3 half sisters, and you know, obviously they have their kids, so it's a pretty big family on that side. And then my mom, again, you know, she has loads of cousins in Karakou, which is a small rural island off the coast of Grenada.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's actually an enormous family.
Excuse my ignorance. What language do they predominantly speak?
It would initially have been like a French patois, but I'd say it's English now, and or Pidgin English, if you will. And it's funny because, like I said, because they are like a Windrush generation, and the way the Caribbean works, I guess, socially is that you have, well, the British West Indies, I can speak for, is that Jamaica is the largest island of the British West Indies.
Yeah.
So essentially it's the equivalent of London, it's more industrialised than the other islands.
Uh-huh.
And the other smaller Caribbean islands, I suppose, are like the home counties, in that they are somewhat industrialised, but not so much, and have a real weird quasi-Victorian kind of, I guess, disposition. So my mum, in conversation today, would be like, on the phone, be like, I spoke to a chap earlier this week. I was like, no one says that anymore. I was on the phone to a chap earlier this week, and he had relayed back to me. I was like, "That's not how people speak." They still carry those platitudes whereby, like, if my aunts come to visit and they ask for a cup of tea, and you serve that tea in a mug, that's an insult.
Really,
it's cup and saucer, like
classic
Victorian. Yeah, you serve them tea like you're supposed to serve tea. None of that tea bag with a tag hanging out.
That's similar to Sri Lanka.
Yeah,
because,
yeah,
you know, the British and all that sort of stuff. But then there's two types of Sri Lankans, those who love the British and those who hate the British.
I mean, yeah, my parents aren't necessarily vocally supportive about like the British and I guess the monarchy, for example. I think my aunts were sad when Princess Diana passed away. I mean, they're not, you know, we don't have like Jubilee kind of they won't buy like the porcelain stuff. But
who wasn't sad when Princess Diana passed away? Like, that's sort of, she transcended.
Parker Bowles? Is that too soon to say that?
If it's too soon now, then it's never going to be soon.
Camilla Parker Bowles, probably the most successful side chick history has ever seen.
Side chick.
I said it. Don't edit that, anybody. That's what it is.
Listener.
Yeah.
She loves
it. Okay, I'll get back to her. We'll talk about it at some point.
She'll come on as a right of rebuttals.
Yeah. And side chick, you know, I get it's the same as mistress. Whatever nomenclature we're using is still the same thing. You know, mate, it's something to consider if we're, you know, where polygamy is concerned. Yeah. Even the most powerful and prestigious man needs, you know, with the world at his feet, you know, born into, you know, massive wealth, still has a need for something
else.
A bit more spice in his life.
This is how, I want to find out how British you are. How do you feel about us wanting to maybe become a republic?
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm fine.
If you had to advocate one side or the other, which side would you encourage? Would you support?
Oh, no, republic.
Really?
Yeah, I mean
that weakens your position as a Brit.
Yeah, but then you know Yugoslavia was a country once.
Yeah.
So I just feel like I try not to form too much of my esteem based on the vaginal lottery of where you are bought, what landmass
you're
on.
The vaginal lottery.
Which is what it is. When it comes to like race or nationality, it is essentially a vaginal lottery. Which wherever the vagina is, which you come out of, that's who you are. So it's, I think, for you to have based your self-esteem and your self-image on that alone is a very weird thing. So the reason I am British is it wasn't something I earned. You know, I was the vagina I came out.
Oh my God! In. You actually referred to your okay. This is nothing. Okay, that's
she's
not.
She's a nurse, so
yeah. Okay.
You know, trust me. My mother said much more graphic things to me, such as, "Well, I mean, Dane, women have needs, and you know, you can barely make a bed. That kind of thing. Yeah. So we're able to have that kind of conversation whereby. But yeah. So for me, it's just like, you know, I'm a British person, and I. Don't even get into the whole thing about shame and stuff like that, but I feel like there's only so much pride you can derive from your nationality because it's just the landmass you're on when you're born. And, you know, in the same way that we are able to scrutinize religious belief, then, you know, nationalist or, I guess, jingoist sentiment isn't that different.
Yeah.
I feel like because, you know, a country is as much as a social construct as, you know, races as well.
It sounds like you are a keen advocate for burning one's passport.
Everyone, yeah. I mean, because no one made the earth. So really, what claim does anybody have? It's a landmass, and these are all just functions whereby, you know, some people would argue that, like, we have terms like the Middle East, which doesn't appear as a pole on a compass. You can't be the Middle East of anywhere.
It's true.
So that is a human construct. So to refer to it as a particular region, you know, that's more of a construct than it is, you know, accurate, you know, geographically. So in the same way that, you know, technically Europe is actually connected to Asia.
Yeah.
So
and Africa.
And Africa. So are those two distinct continents? So for me, it's just kind of like it's the land. You can make a country out of anywhere. You know, as far as, you know, some older generations or young generations, as far as they're concerned, you know, when they're growing up, there's two Sudans.
Yeah.
Not the case when I was younger, for example. Or, you know, for preceding generations, like Yugoslavia was one nation and Czechoslovakia was a nation. Now it's not. So how much pride can you put into the idea of nation where a nation can change that easily? There were two Americas at one point. Like, even for me, it's like when people are like, we got to go to North Korea, we'll show them and blah, blah, blah. Last time you went to North Korea, we ended up with two Koreas. So.
Where have we gone? We got another two.
Yeah. Who knows? We may have another two. So that's it. So it's just, you know, culture can be a good thing, but culture can be a problem as well. If the idea of culture means, you know, you define yours by
opposition
to another. Exactly.
Well, mate, Dane, this has been very insightful.
Thank you very
funny,
much. It's been fun.
And you've used the term vaginal lottery, which...
Vaginal lottery. I'm a trademark that too. And I also called Camilla Parker Bowles a very successful side chick.
Thank you very much, Dane.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Okay.
This has been Burn Your Passport for another season. Thank you so much for listening in. Three seasons. I don't know how we did it. Well, we did it by interviewing great guests and having some pretty good banter, I reckon. I'd like to thank my producers, Tom Wright and James Milson, who have done an amazing job, who put this all together. I'm just here basically saying exactly what they tell me to say. There's a teleprompter in front of me right now, saying even this sentence. So thank you very much for that, guys. Also, you guys, the listeners, if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't have the numbers. And I'm all about the numbers. You are just numbers to me. Nah, I'm kidding. Hit me up on socials. Otherwise, see you on the comedy circuit or in podcast land, wherever that is, if podcasts are even real. See ya.
Passengers are reminded to burn your passport.